On today's episode of The Good Word, the NBA might have a gambling problem. Yeah, seriously. The Lakers, without LeBron, they find a way to beat the Bucks, who we still have trust issues with. And we go deep on all of the playoff races around the league. All that and, of course, time to have a stroll on Wednesdays on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is a Wednesday, which means it is Wednesdays with Stro. Tom Haberstroh is here with us. Of course, Tom is now a Yahoo Sports contributor. Of course, he's always the proprietor of the Substack, TomTheFinder.com, and he's the analytics insider for the Portland Trail Blazers and a bunch of other places that you have seen, Tom, through the years. How you doing, Stro?
I'm doing great, man. How are you, Vinny?
I am wonderful. We are 3 weeks before the end of the regular season. We're going to get into some Lakers Bucks, but first, I think we should get into Jontay Porter. The NBA is investigating him. He missed two games for quote-unquote personal reasons, and now it's revealed that, you know, some real unders were being taken in January and in March. Is this one of those unintended consequences that the league should have expected once you start embracing everything that comes with gambling? Is that how you see it, or do you see it as just a completely bigger problem that can get bigger and can get worse, considering Jontay Porter is a reserve and we haven't seen any stars or anything like that get into it? How do you see it as an overview?
Yeah, I read your column, Vinny. Totally agree. Unintended consequence of the NBA going in all in on gambling, partnering with different sportsbook operators, putting the Summer League in Las Vegas and having LeBron James talking openly about having a team in Las Vegas. It seems like everything is pointing towards the NBA just being in bed with gambling more so than ever before. And it wasn't that long ago, Vinny. You remember the Tim Donaghy scandal rocked the NBA. And keep in mind, the NBA did not catch Tim Donaghy. That was the FBI caught Tim Donaghy, and then there was a New York Post story, and then everything hit the fan. So in this particular story with Jontay Porter, it's worth noting the NBA did not catch Jontay Porter. At least this seems to be coming from the DraftKings sportsbook operator that self-policed this and noticed that not only were there lots of Jontay Porter unders being bet or attempted to being bet, they were the top money makers at the sportsbook the next morning when they sent out the little report to its users. This is all coming from ESPN, some great reporting from Brian Windhorst and David Purdom and Adrian Wojnarowski around this story. And to me, this is a bombshell. And it also feels like with the Shohei Ohtani stuff over in Major League Baseball and JB Bickerstaff's comments and Eric Spoelstra backing those comments about what he hears during the games, other coaches around the league behind closed doors, they talk about this and they've been talking about it, Vinny. They've been talking about this is going to be a big problem for the league because what they hear at these games and what fans feel enabled to say is way different than pre-Adam Silver op-ed in the New York Times. It used to be kind of a hush-hush thing. Now that it's legalized, fans feel like they're enabled to say the quiet part out loud, which is they're betting on these games and they're very upset when it doesn't go their way. So the volume is turned up all the way. And I do think that the Jontay Porter story is huge. It feels like the tide is pulling out and the tsunami is about to hit. If it hasn't already hit with the Shohei Ohtani story, it feels like something bigger is going to happen here. And Jontay Porter feels like, to me, the sacrificial lamb.
Well, according to Shohei Ohtani, or at least the guy who interprets for Shohei Ohtani this time, he said, no, I have never been involved in anything like this before. I don't know. Like it's, Tom, it is one of those things that is, it was before it was taboo. And I don't pretend to be a gambling expert. I will say this. I'm not surprised that the NBA didn't catch Jontay Porter, because Vegas is supposed to keep things on the level. Vegas is supposed to watch these things to catch irregularities and to make sure that everything that's happening is above board and to make sure that if you're gambling, you're actually gambling and you're not sort of cashing in on insider knowledge, you know, that sort of thing. Like, it's been tricky. It's going to get trickier. And hopefully, put it like this. You said sacrificial lamb. I don't know if we're going to see Jonte Porter ever in the NBA again, right?
And that was true even before this happened. Like, he was a fringe player, two-way mm-hmm. player for the Toronto Raptors. He's the brother, the younger brother of Michael Porter Jr., who's making max money, $34, $35 million a year for the Denver Nuggets champion. And so this story does have kind of a larger ripple effect than I think the average fan knows. And what stands out to me about this story, Vinny, and I've written about this week, is he pulled himself out of both of those games in question. This isn't just he was hitting these unders, or at least he didn't reach those numbers. He was voluntarily pulling himself after the first quarter ended in each of these two games, the Clippers and the Kings game. So that raises red flags. There was one play that I wouldn't say is a red flag that I saw, where he is tipping a rebound to a teammate, almost feels like he doesn't want the rebound. He's like, oh, actually, you take this, RJ. And they gave him the rebound anyway. That's more like an orange flag to me. Knowing how this story has evolved on its own, that play stood out to me. But there isn't like obvious Jonte Porter throwing these games or throwing his stats. Right. I think, Vinny, the first thing the NBA needs to do is investigate this, obviously. But they need to get rid of, if they need to collaborate with these sports books, get rid of these fringe NBA player props. And secondly, get rid of the 3-point under over at 0.5. Vinny, there should be no 0.5 over under on any 3-point attempts for any player. Just get rid of it, because that shot, you can control that, right? You can control whether you take a 3-pointer or not in a game. And to me, that is leaving yourself open to another Jonte Porter scenario where you got an open shot at the 3-point line. Oh, I'm just going to do a little dribble handoff here instead. That feels like, to me, an easy way to limit your risk.
Well, I think if you do something like that, you're basically telling the players that you don't trust them. And if you can't trust the players, then you can't do this. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying the league should or shouldn't do this, but I'm simply saying that with every other professional, and if we call the NCAA professional, which they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
If every other sports league is doing it, I'm not going to bag on the NBA for doing it, nor can I say that we don't trust our players. If you can't trust your players, you don't have a league. And I think that's a very tricky line to walk. And it's one of the, not even necessarily a crux or a piece of my column, it's just, this is something that Adam Silver has to deal with. Like, you're just going all in all the time on all these new ventures, playing all in. Yep. In-season tournament, all in. Like, you're trying to maximize all the revenue because the revenue's out there, and you got to try to grow these games because you got all these new billionaire owners who want a return on their investment, and they want it quickly, and you're trying to grow the league to expand to Vegas, expand to Seattle, you know, all these different things. And I don't know if there's necessarily the cautious amount of checks and balances. That's the part that's just a little scary and a little squeamish to me. But John, we got to talk some actual basketball. Because last night, the Lakers decided they weren't going to get blown out by the Milwaukee Bucks. Or the Milwaukee Bucks decided, you know what? Just when you think you guys are ready to believe in us, just when we think we're ready to believe in us, we go and do this. Double overtime game. No LeBron out with his right ankle. Anthony Davis was an absolute monster defensively. The block shots on Dame, the defense, the switching, all of that. I don't care that it was 128 to 124. That was a demolition performance by AD, who did not turn it on until later in the game because offensively he didn't have it. What does that say to you? What was your big grand feeling from last night? Is it that we're not ready to believe in the Bucks, or is it that, man, if the Lakers can look like this without LeBron, they should have been much better early on in the season?
Man, when AD plays like that, is there a better defender on the planet? I mean, no. Those blocks on Dame at the rim, those floaters never get blocked. he couldn't even get above Anthony Davis on a floater. It wasn't like he was trying to get at the rim and he just swatted it. Those, not just the physical ability, but also, Vinny, that was at the end of the game. It was in overtime. It's like this dude was limping around on the floor for a half the game, Willis Reed style, and yet he was able to make those plays at the end. Incredible performance by him. But also, I want to point out, we talked about this, Vinny. Giannis Antetokounmpo, late game situations, who do you trust, Jokic or Giannis? And what did I say? I said Giannis is a liability down the stretch because of his free throws. And that dude missed two clutch free throws at the end. And there were times where he got fouled, maybe that spin move that he got fouled and they called it on the floor. And Reggie Miller's like, I actually think Darvin Ham wishes he went to the free throw line.
Right, right.
Vinny, he was 1-6. And that, to me, the crunch time collapse of the Milwaukee Bucks, not just Giannis at the free throw line, but also Chris Middleton was gone. He was not there. And he pulled up on mid-range jumpers, missed. He was a guy who just seemed invisible down the stretch. And Dame, he had his moments, and he had tough moments. He got blocked. He had a couple threes there. But this is a situation where Giannis Antetokounmpo, even though he can get to the rim relentlessly, I think teams are going to watch this and be like, we're going to foul him. We're going to foul him down the stretch and force him to go to the line. And that's why I think Jokic and a couple other players are superior as a basketball player and who I trust more to win a championship.
Yeah, I think Milwaukee is in such an interesting place because, like you said, Dame hit the big three in the corner in the first overtime to put them up two. And you're like, okay, you've collapsed. You've stabilized yourself. You're going to win this game. And then they fouled D'Angelo Russell. Like one of the big things for me, and before we are remiss to mention our buddy Austin Reeves, you know, who had a triple double, another huge game for him. Like he steps up, D'Angelo Russell steps up. They play with more pace when LeBron isn't there. That's not to say that they're better when LeBron isn't there. But Milwaukee's point of attack defense, whether that's Dame at the top, Chris Middleton, who's recovering, he's got bad knees and a bad ankle. That just doesn't feel good to me when going into a playoff setting because your point of attack, no matter how physical the defense is going to be allowed to be, if you can't guard your man, your defense is going to be compromised. And if Milwaukee can't afford to keep Brook Lopez on the floor just because some of the numbers haven't necessarily looked great and they like using Bobby Portis out there, you want to have Giannis playing small ball five sometimes. I got more questions about the Bucks than I felt like I should at this stage.
I hear you. And a lot of those times, they're trying to make up for losing that ground by reaching in, and Chris Middleton got caught with his hand in the cookie jar, and D'Angelo Russell gets the free throw line. Did you like that little back and forth between Austin Reeves and Damian Lillard where Dame got the foul three from Austin Reeves coming around that screen, and then on the next way down the floor, Austin Rivers got Dame, where it's like, man, the Lakers, I know people are watching these free throw totals and just saying, man, the Lakers just keep doing this. They keep getting crazy, crazy differentials in their free throw totals. Last night, they had 15 more free throws than the Milwaukee Bucks. And I'm not going to say this is all on the officials, but when Austin Reeves has got the whistle, he is a different player. When D'Angelo Russell is getting the whistle, they are a different team. And so it does help them, and their free throw differential is like all-time levels right now. They don't foul defensively. They get to the free throw a lot. I also want to shout out Darvin Ham for the decision to play Rui down the stretch more, because one of my biggest pet peeves, and I know why coaches do it, Vinny, is riding the team that got you to overtime having them finish out overtime. Darvin Ham said, Taurean Prince, I got you. We need some fresh legs. Rui, go out there. And he was a difference maker for the Lakers in the next two overtimes. So I loved seeing that. And I know you want to trust your guys that got you to overtime. But a lot of times, hey, bring in those fresh legs because Dame and Giannis, they look gas. And Rui was a big difference.
Well, and that was the point that I was going to bring up. Because D'Angelo Russell is not a huge free throw line guy. Because, A, he takes a lot of threes and he's not necessarily athletic enough. In a way, he's more skilled than athletic. He's more precise in his movements than, you know what I mean? He can just blow by you.
Mm-hmm.
If the Lakers are a team that doesn't foul and they're naturally bigger, you can play Rui. Rui's a big dude. He's not tall dude, but he's big dude. If they don't foul and they get to the foul line, is this just a matter of if Denver finishes at one, then the Lakers are going home. If anybody else finishes at one in the West, the Lakers have a real chance.
Yeah, and look, I've done research on the officials with the Lakers. They get the most veteran officials on their games. They get the most qualified officials on their games. If you look at which officials go to the playoffs, the Lakers routinely get the higher regarded officials in the NBA. Number one in the NBA in what I call referee score, based on the crew chiefs in the league, the finals referees, they get the veteran officials. Tony Brothers is on that game last night because of the fact that it is a national TV game.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is it because the Lakers are on national TV so much you send your best crews to the national TV games as opposed to the Laker games?
Exactly. Even when you take out the national TV games, Vinny, the Lakers get the better officials. If you just remove national TV games, and the reason is because they draw a huge crowd. They get eyeballs, and the NBA makes the decision, we're not going to make all the referees' quality equal across the league. We're going to make this, A, we want to make sure our best crews are on the biggest games. And the Lakers, more often than not, are in the big games. So that's a decision. Not many teams like that decision, but it is, it is their way to make sure that when they have the most eyeballs and they have the most people in the stands, that they have their top people on those games. So when it comes to the postseason, does the whistle benefit the Lakers? When it comes to Minnesota, we know Rudy Gobert, what he has alleged with the officials already doing the money signs. I got to believe that, yes, they're going to train the officials to not have that in the back of their mind when, let's say, Minnesota goes against the Lakers. But, man, the humans are humans, and they're not robots. And I got to imagine if Minnesota gets the number one seed, let's just say, and faces the Lakers in that matchup, 1-8, I would seriously consider picking the Lakers in that series.
I can't believe we're actually at this point because LeBron is still old. I don't know if some of the things that worked last night will work in an actual 7-game series, especially against a team like Minnesota. Minnesota's a really good defensive team. They don't have the point of attack issues that the Bucks have. The Bucks might have, amongst, let's say, playoff contenders, the worst point of attack defense at the top, right? And there was no Pat Beverly last night. So, but how much can he actually help when your two high usage guys are turnstiles at this point? Dame, because he's old. Middleton, they're both old. It's an interesting quandary in front of us. It's an interesting and intriguing spot for the Lakers because I don't think they're getting above 9 in the West. I don't think they're getting to 8. I don't think they're getting to 7. So what that means is, guys, if you're in 9 or 10, the only spot you can get is 8. And that means you got to win 2 games to do it. So it's just the real, for all the optimism that people may have about the Lakers with games like last night and the way that they've been playing generally, they still have to win 2 games to get to 8. And if number one is Denver, I hate to tell y'all this, they're going home. We're going to pause for a second to pay some bills, and we're going to be back with Tom Haberstroth to talk about some of the playoff races in both conferences. And producer John has a top 5 for both of us that I think you guys are really going to like. We're back with Tom Haberstroh on The Good Word. Tom, 3 weeks left in the season. Some of the races are locked up, but I feel like it's almost in tiers, right? Number one is locked up in the East, but then there's 2 and 3, and then there's 4, 5, and 6. Like, there's just, and that's just in the Eastern Conference, and then, of course, the play-in, it looks like it's already set. But how do you see, and I'll just assume that 3, 4, and 5 in the East intrigue you more than anything else in the Eastern Conference, right?
Yeah, 3, 4, 5. I mean, obviously, if you're trying to avoid the Boston Celtics, you want to get that 3 seed rather than the 4. So Cleveland is in the driver's seat at this point, but they've been dealing with injuries all season. Their resiliency is underrated. Their ability to lose Evan Mobley or Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland, it hasn't seemed to matter. So they seem to be the most injury-proof of those teams. Now, if Jalen Brunson goes out or anything like that, the Knicks are in a big problem. And OG Anunoby, he's got the elbow issue. I was working that Portland Trailblazers game when he aggravated his elbow injury, and Thibodeau, in Thibodeau fashion, was like, yeah, you stay out there. And I was like, man.
Play.
Yeah. And I can't, Nick Friedel's got it. I don't think we can compete with Friedel. But the idea is Thibodeau and like back in Chicago has a reputation for riding his guys right into the postseason, no matter what. And you're going to see it here with Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson and OG Anunoby. I think Cleveland's got this. I think they got the number three seed, even though if the Knicks are healthy, I prefer the Knicks over the Cavs in a series. And I think the Knicks are better than the Cavs. But I think that little jumble right there, I think it's the Cavs in the driver's seat.
It's look, Cavs, Knicks, Magic. Magic are 1.5 games back. Like, they won't have necessarily the urgency to go after three. Like, they may want home court advantage, but this is where Orlando expected to be. You know, kind of on the edge of the play-in. If we get home court, fine. But I won't say they're happy to be there, because I don't think they're going to just go out there and get swept by whomever they play. But this is at a point where you're 70 games in, you're kind of playing with house money a little bit. And with the Knicks, we just haven't seen a full healthy product since the trade deadline. And with Tom Thibodeau, you're never going to see a full healthy product at any point in the season. Those dudes are banged up in training camp because Tibbs is probably running some shadow thing in July. You know what I mean? We don't know about. Get DraftKings on that. Now, 6, 7, and 8 in the East. I think the Heat, and producer John is probably cringing right now, but I think the Heat should desperately be trying to get to 6. Yeah. I wouldn't want them to be anywhere near the play-in. And if I'm the Bucks or the Celtics, I wouldn't want them anywhere near me. But them getting to 6 would require consistency that they haven't played with all year. The Pacers are there, but you haven't seen Tyrese Halliburton be the full version of himself post-All-Star break. I'm going to say post-All-Star breaks, post-hamstring injury. And then with Philly being 1.5 games back, you don't know when Joel Embiid is going to come back. You've heard different rumors at different points and different times, but nothing is definitive out there. How do you see 6, 7, and 8 shaking out?
I think Miami has this. I think they got the 6th seed. When you look at the remaining strength of schedule, the Miami Heat have the 2nd easiest strength of schedule in the NBA going down the stretch. They've got a couple games against Toronto. They got Wizards. They got just an easier slate. And you know the Miami Heat, they can always do Undertaker style, sit up in the coffin just when you think they're dead. They rise from the ashes and make a run. But I don't think that this team wants to do that again. I think they are going to prioritize getting that 6th seed and not have to deal with the play-in yet again. And their schedule is soft. Look, they had to win that game against Golden State. That was a bad loss, but I do think that I have more confidence in the Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra, Bam Adebayo, and Jimmy Butler nabbing that 6th seed than I do the other two teams on this list. And I do not think Joel Embiid will return this season, just my personal opinion. I think that this is a situation where I will believe it when I see it, right, when Embiid comes back and what kind of shape he is if he does come back. So I'm just writing Joel Embiid off. And if he comes back, great. But I don't think you should have any expectation at this point that he is going to be A, back, and B, performing at a high level.
And even if they were to get out of the play-in, they haven't shown me the playoff bona fides for me to be afraid of them at 7 or 8 playing against 1 or 2. Now, to the Western Conference. 1, 2, and 3. You got Denver, OKC, Minnesota. 3 different levels of objectives here. You know what I mean? The Nuggets are clearly the best team. The Nuggets are the championship favorite unless someone does something stupid, which I haven't seen through 70 games. Do you see it as the Nuggets having the 1 seed to take if they want it? Or do you see the Thunder or Timberwolves going and trying to take it because they will prioritize it?
OKC needs that number 1 seed. They need everything on their side because they don't have that playoff experience. But if they have home court advantage in every round going through the Western Conference, that's going to be huge. They are not as good, nearly as good on the road as they are at home. And you know Chesapeake would be popping for this team in the playoffs. So if they can get that number 1 seed, especially if in a matchup against Denver, you're going to want that extra game. It's not everything. Most series don't go to 7 games, and most series you do not get to enjoy that home court advantage in terms of just sheer numbers. Yet it's better to have the opening 2 games on your home floor. But the thing about the Denver Nuggets, Vinny, they got a home court advantage no matter what because of that altitude.
Right.
Like, even if they're not playing more games at home than on the road. That altitude is so big in a series that I think they're cool if they have a 2 seed or a 3 seed. Minnesota, man, I think they're in the same bucket as the Thunder. They need everything on their side to overcome the playoff inexperience. But I think number one, OKC should try to get that number one seed. Obviously, if the guys are banged up, don't play them. You don't want to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater and just try to win a random Tuesday night game at the expense of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander long term. But I do think OKC, it's more important for them to get that number one seed than the other two on the list.
And if OKC runs into the Lakers in the first round and you got old Lakers against light in the pants OKC, let's just say we might not be spending that much time in Oklahoma City in round one, even if they get the first seed. Here's the thing. The atmosphere for the games is excellent. It is, what do you do during the off days in Oklahoma City? That is not a dare. Don't dare me, y'all. I promise you. That's not a dare. That's not a challenge. Don't tase me, y'all. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. Now, 6, 7, and 8 is really intriguing to Tom because Tom has a take on the Phoenix Suns. Dallas is in the 6th spot. They've won 5 straight. They kicked the doors off of the Sacramento Kings last night. The Kings are a game back, but they own the tiebreaker over Phoenix. Tied with Phoenix, both are a game back. So what is your Phoenix Suns take here? Because I feel like we're going to put flames on the screen after you're done talking.
I think they're going to miss the playoffs, straight up.
Really? They're going to slide out of the play-in?
I think they are in dangerous territory here. Listen to their final 10 games here, Vinny, down the stretch. Okay, we're talking Phoenix Suns, right? They're 8 seed right now. They're 2 games up on the Lakers, but the Lakers have the tiebreaker over the Phoenix Suns, which is big because the Lakers, I mean, if LeBron comes back, they're playing at this level,
right?
They can overtake them. So I'm not locking in the Lakers, even though they're 2 games back. They have the tiebreaker over the Suns. Now listen to this schedule, okay? For the remaining 10 games on the Phoenix Suns schedule, they're going at Denver, at OKC, at New Orleans. Then they come home to play Cleveland, Minnesota, New Orleans. And then they got a back-to-back with the Clippers with travel in between. Then they go finish the season at Sacramento, at Minnesota. Did you hear a bad team on that list? Now, you can say Clippers by the way that they're playing recently, but there is not a single non-playoff team on that list. They are playing 10 teams with at least 12 games over 500 in their record. It is by far the toughest schedule. The remaining schedule is the average team is like a 53-win team. The average team is basically a 3 seed, right? So you've got that and the fact that they've lost the tiebreaker to the Lakers already. And you have Bradley Beal getting hurt again. This time he was out with his finger. I feel like if they get down to the 9-10, if they fall out of the 8 spot, this is a Phoenix Suns team that was, for many people, picked to be the favorite out West because of that big three. I think there is a much higher chance than people are willing to say that they're going to miss the playoffs entirely. I'm not saying they're going to miss the play-in. I'm saying they're going to miss the playoffs entirely because right now it's looking like 9-10.
That would be disastrous if such a thing happened. Like, you brought it up and you said it's a, you know, ambitious thing with those big three. And they've gotten as good as you could expect out of Grayson Allen and out of Jusuf Nurkic. Kevin Durant is still a reasonable version of Kevin Durant. They just seem to have these late game, when we say late game, they seem to have these fourth quarter disasters where
they lose to the Spurs.
You lose to the Spurs without Vic. No, you don't just lose to the Spurs. Yeah. You lose to the Spurs without Big Vic. I can't name a player worth a damn on the Spurs outside of Big Vic. And I know they got, you know, Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell. Like, I'm kind of joking. But
point taken, Vinny. Point taken. You don't have to say those guys' names. We know what you mean. You're playing who they play for with the Spurs is a lot harder than you think. But continue.
No, it is. It's just to the point that it's really, really a disastrous thing. Now, do you give much credence in the Houston Rockets of Ime Udoka, who at some point we're going to have a conversation about, but we don't know how to discuss a gentleman like Ime Udoka in such flattering terms? Do you think they will catch Golden State? Golden State had a big win against Miami last night. They had a big second half. Klay Thompson back in the starting lineup, albeit for probably a short period of time. Stephen Curry, while he played 30 minutes, and again, they won by 20. I'll be damned. It's the weirdest thing, and it's the weirdest coaching quandary in the world. But do you think, because that feels like that's the last one left, I don't think Golden State is going to catch the Lakers at 9. I think we're basically set. I'm going to be on an airplane to go to California for the play-in tournament, unless the Houston Rockets decide that they're going to take Golden State out. Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. It's a great story. Jalen Green is looking like Vince Carter out there, like prime Vince Carter with his shooting and with his off the dribble and his bouncer at the rim. He's been outstanding. I think a little bit of it is soft scheduling. If you look at this run that they're having, it's against some cupcake scheduling. So I do think that they're going to hit a wall a little bit here. But Ime Udoka is coaching these guys up without Şengün. I don't think anyone thought that they had this in them. No. But they're doing an excellent job. And I think when you look at the Golden State Warriors, yeah, they've had a couple really bad high-profile losses and some back and forth with Steve Kerr and Stephen Curry resting down the stretch. I just think they're in the driver's seat. And Houston, while it is a nice little run here they're making, I think the Warriors make this play-in team.
I'm not so sure. That's all I'll just say. I am not so sure. I don't know if I believe in these old guys. I think when you have like 10 or 12 bad losses, you can wind up having 3 or 4 more. So all I'm going to say, if you got 10 or 12 bad losses, you can wind up having 15 or 16. Now, this is where we bring producer John into the show, where we have top five. Now, producer John has selected a category where we're going to have our top five of something. Producer John, introduce it for us.
Well, since you guys are talking about the playoff races around the NBA, and since you guys also have fantastic memories, I thought it might be fun to do your top five playoff upsets of all time. Vinny, I can see your list. Tom, I cannot. Vinny, I'm already mad at you. For the last one on here. Although it's a good pick. I'm just mad that I have to deal with it again.
So since I don't see Tom's, I want Tom to give me his five.
Okay. All right. So starting with number five. So I'll go backwards here.
Okay.
Number five, I got Denver Nuggets 94 to Dikembe Mutombo over the Seattle Supersonics, the 1-8 upset. I would put it higher, but back then it was a 5-game series in the opening round. So in terms of the unlikelihood, I think there's other 8-1 upsets that are better or more memorable to me. But I got that at number five. Number four, speaking of 8-1, I got the Miami Heat over the Milwaukee Bucks last year. Yes, the Bucks didn't have Giannis for a couple of those games there, but they had home court advantage, and they should have beaten the pants off of the Miami Heat last year. And that was the second time they've been upset by the Miami Heat. I got that one at number four. Number three, Pistons over the Lakers in 2004 NBA Finals. We look back on that and say, like, yeah, they were the more complete team, and that trade changed everything for the Pistons. But man, going into that series, that wasn't the talk. The talk was the Lakers got this series against the Pistons with Gary Payton and Karl Malone, and they blew that series in 5 games, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
Crazy, crazy upset there. Number two, Vinny, I got 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers down 3-1 in a series against the 73 Golden State Warriors without home court advantage. I think that is the greatest upset in finals history, considering not maybe before the series, but down 3-1 against a 73-win team. That's my number two upset. And number one, come on, the We Believe Warriors, 2007 Warriors over Dallas, 8-1. At the Oracle, they have a little plaque or a little frame around the hole that was kicked in by what was the story? It was Dirk who punched a hole through the wall, and they put a frame over it. Dirk wins the MVP, number one seed, and BD and Stack, they make that upset, a historical upset. The We Believe Warriors are number one in the playoff upset in my book.
Now, yes, and they smoked a whole lot of weed that series and a whole lot of weed after that series. I think that was the case.
Shouts to Donnie Nelson. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is also on my list. I will quibble with Golden State Cavs, because if I look at that series and you ask me who are the two best players in that series, I will tell you the two best players in that series were LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. that does not feel like quite an upset. That's just me. That's just me.
I know. I know. But down 3-1 with that kind of talent on the other side and a 73-win team.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. And Vegas, by the way, Vegas going into that series, they had Golden State obviously favored, but it wasn't an overwhelming favorite going into that.
Right.
But just the midseason down 3-1, that's reasonable minds can disagree. What you got next?
All right. So for me, and this is in no particular order, but I will start with the 2007 series just to get John's heartbreak out of the way. John, yes, the 2007, we believe, Warriors knocking off Dallas in 6 games. Dirk getting punked. Now, Dirk was able to redeem himself in 2011, and we give Dirk a lot of hell for that series. But, baby, that was coaching clinic run by Nelly over Avery Johnson. Poor Avery Johnson. He's never recovered from that series. Now, and y'all know I'm a Wayback Machine person. I go deep into the crates. So here's the rest of my list. Of course, 1994, Nuggets, Sonics, 5-game series. Sonics are up 2-0 going to Denver. And then that game 5, I think it's on a Saturday afternoon on NBC, like, you know, the whole thing, all of that. So the Dikembe Mutombo holding the ball, holding it over
iconic.
His head.
You iconic, know, yes.
That's iconic. Now here's where things get really tricky for me. 1991, Lakers beating the Blazers in the Western Conference Finals. Why? That Lakers team was dog. Okay, Magic Johnson was old. The Lakers were old. That's why the team that you saw against the 91 Bulls were not the Showtime Lakers. The Blazers had the best regular season team in the NBA that year. They were coming off losing the finals the year before. They looked like the best team, and they melted down. That was that greatest play of all time where Terry Porter misses a jumper. Magic Johnson doesn't want to get fouled, so he grabs the ball, flips it over his head, and just watches the clock run out. Smartest play in NBA history I've ever seen, right? Next. 1989, Bulls-Cavs. That's the shot. Jordan over Elo. The Bulls had lost all 6 games to the Cavs that year. The Cavs were the best team in the regular season up until like the last 3 or 4 weeks when the Pistons overtook them. But people thought Cleveland was not just the present of the Eastern Conference, but the future of the Eastern Conference. People thought the Cavs were going to win championships. Michael Jordan sent them home in Richfield. Whatever, Richfield Coliseum, whatever that was. That was that Doug Collins, you know, I'm going to draw up a play for Dave Corzine. And Michael Jordan says, no, you're going to give me the ball. Are you an idiot? Last one.
Hold up. We got to pause here for a second.
Yes.
You're saying Michael Jordan over the Cavs is one of the greatest upsets in NBA history?
Yes.
When you say, hey, who are the two best players in that Cleveland Golden State Finals? You're saying LeBron and Kyrie. Who's the best player in that series?
Michael Jordan.
Okay. And it's by far, it's not even close. And so you're saying that's one of the greatest upset. Okay. I disagree, Vinny, but
These are the days where you played division opponents 6 times in the regular season. That is a huge sample size. They lost all 6 games to the Cavs that year. All 6. And regardless of what you people think, Scottie Pippen was not that guy, especially not then. He wasn't that guy, all right? Michael Jordan hadn't molded that man into a decent player yet, okay?
And you've molded,
And if you got Doug Collins in there saying, we got Michael Jordan on the team, but we're going to call this last play for Dave Corzine, that's coaching malpractice for the entire season because we don't know what type of nonsense Doug was pulling off during 82 games. I just know what he did with 3 seconds left, and he got Michael Jordan on his team, and he's like, let me just be smart. Now,
or Doug Collins' Jedi mind trick knew that Michael was going to be pissed off about the play being drawn up, and he knew he was going to take over down the stretch. I'm saying maybe we're not giving Doug Collins enough credit for lighting that fire underneath Michael Jordan.
Yeah, okay, Jedi. All right. Last one, and this is one that I don't know if people consider it an upset. But that 2009 Cleveland Cavaliers team had won 66 games. That might have been the best, most athletic version of LeBron James we've ever seen. He had an excellent playoff series. He averaged 38, 8, and 8. The 2 games the Cavs won in the Eastern Conference Finals won the back of LeBron James. But the Orlando Magic had Dwight Howard, Rashard Lewis, Hedo Turkoglu, and they just bombed them from three. It was like the beginning of pace and space. We just didn't know it. And it prevented the Cavs and Lakers, LeBron and Kobe, from actually playing in the NBA Finals together. That was, to me, that is so underrated of an upset because we just don't think of it that way. But man, that version of LeBron was really, really good. And they got put out by Stan Van Gundy in the Orlando Magic.
Man, I will say this, Vinny, now that you brought it up, that might be the biggest upset, not the Magic and Cavs series that you're talking about, but the fact that we never got Kobe, LeBron in the finals. That might be the biggest upset. We never got a Kobe LeBron finals, despite them being at the apex of their careers
at the same
right around the same time. I mean, come on. It is like one of the great what ifs in NBA history is how did we not get a Kobe LeBron series ever?
Ever.
So yeah, that might be the biggest upset of them all, Vinny.
I win. This is what happens. I win. That, ladies and gentlemen, is, of course, Tom Haberstroh. He will be joining us every other Wednesday here. Tom, man, really appreciate you as always, man.
Thanks for inviting me on The Good Word, Vinny.
Hey, that is Tom Haberstroh. Don't forget to check him out on Tom the Finder. He's going to be a Yahoo Sports contributor. The contract is signed. He's collecting them checks. My man, Tom, really appreciate you again. Thanks to producer John, the entire team who works really hard behind the scenes. John does everything as far as the show prep. So don't forget to show him some love. Jake and Dan, they'll be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. And I will be back for another episode of The Good Word on Monday morning. Until then, everybody be safe.